listening to Say Something with Yossi Goldie on the Boston Free Radio.
If the safety and effectiveness of the current GM crops are no longer in doubt, then why are they under such fierce attack by their critics? There seem to be a number of factors at play beyond the realm of science. And it is these non-scientific issues that are the subject of this episode. These factors can be grouped into three broad categories, the first of which falls under the heading of political. To begin with, there is a fear that this new technology gives too much economic power to the handful of large multinational corporations that own it at the expense of the individual farmer to whom it is sold.
Why are we growing GE crops when the only people who are benefiting are large multinational corporations like Monsanto?
I think there is some truth to this perception that the big corporations are in control of the technology. That's fairly obvious because it does take a lot of money to research and do the technology and develop the technology. So obviously it's going to be larger players that are involved with that. Is this unique with biotech? No, it is not.
The corporatization of the food system has been there for a long time. That doesn't justify it, but it can't be used as something that is synonymous with GMOs.
In some ways, it's like the information industry and the automobile industry and other industries where there's continued consolidation of the established systems and then new growth through new small companies at the cutting edge.
In the meantime, it's true that GM seeds are more expensive to farmers than the older conventional ones.
Today we buy the seed at a fairly elevated price, and then we pay a technical use agreement, which is $15 an acre for every acre of canola seed.
In addition, GM seeds are covered by patent, so farmers must repurchase them each year. They cannot save the seeds they grow themselves for planting the following season.
But farmers are used to this. They know what it's like to buy seeds every year. When they buy hybrid corn, for example.
Hybrid corn has been around since before World War II. And the hybrid seed has gladly been purchased by the farmers. And you can't propagate your hybrid seed.
Hybrid corn is the result of the still mysterious genetic phenomenon known as hybrid vigor. When pollen from one purebred or homozygous corn plant is sprinkled on the silk or female sex organ of a genetically different purebred, the resulting hybrid or heterozygous seeds produce uniform plants that are superior to both parents. Because of Mendel's second law of genetics, the next generation of seeds are highly variable, so farmers must repurchase more of the original hybrid seeds each year. Since its introduction in the 1930s, hybrid corn has replaced the older, open-pollinated varieties.
And it was a great benefit. I mean, it was at the heart of one of the major biological improvements in food production.
Yes, it was. Good evening, everybody out there. I'd like to welcome you to a very special episode of Say Something with Yossi Goldie. which is me, while we talk about the ever-popular debate, natural versus unnatural, please at any time you want to ring in, you can call me. We have operators open who take your calls. My number is 617-454-4237. And you can call me now. Or later. Or whenever you feel like it. Because together, we can naturally create a bond of golden energy. First off, I have a special guest today. He is, his name is Bruce. He comes to us live from the computer. I don't know if you would call this natural or unnatural, but he has a lot to say about this ever-present debate. Bruce, go ahead.
First, there is no difference between something natural and something unnatural. They are, to use a cliche, two sides of the same coin.
Yes.
Therefore, they are inseparable. Without one, the other would perish, and vice versa. The world was made with these differences that people divide into things that to them with their individual lifescapes seem natural or unnatural, and those change from culture to culture and from time to time.
Yes.
Without these differences, or as some may put it, the natural and the unnatural, it is arguable that we as a species would have never existed.
Yes.
And because of the above, both are ethically equal over a period of time, for ethics is not a stagnant paradigm but something that socially evolves with the group aspect of human nature.
Yes, Bruce, I have to agree with you on that. It's like telling the truth or a lie, and when you tell the truth twice, when does it turn into a lie? It is a pressing issue at hand. I also have Juniper on the machine.
Say something. Say something.
She would like to say something, because she as well sees something. Go ahead. Juniper? Hello? Are you there?
Natural versus unnatural.
Yes.
A good debate, which can be viewed from a couple different perspectives. You
yes.
could say that everything is natural and there is no such thing as unnatural, simply because anything that could possibly exist must be natural,
uh-huh.
i.e., allowed to exist by whatever it is that manifests things into existence. Or you could begin to look at some of the limiting systems, economic, political,
yes.
socio-economic, science, religion, etc. Humans have established in things they have invented, concocted, which very ignore what it seems nature is trying to teach us. Basically, this would be everything, chemical, material, psychological,
yes.
and otherwise brought about by man, that doesn't somehow reciprocate the modes of nature. What we can observe about its functioning and how man chooses not to play by the same rules it does, anything man creates,
yes.
from say, plastic, to oppressive, uncaring, and insincere government, that doesn't have a form of it that can be found in nature, could be taken as an example of something unnatural.
Yes,
I
true.
Don't think man can ever really create something outside of nature, because to do so would be like saying that man could ever be above and in control of nature, which is false.
Yes.
If a huge meteorite smashes the earth to bits, Almighty man is doomed. and this would be considered an obviously natural event.
Yes.
To worry about something being unnatural is to misunderstand what nature really is, in the sense that man will always be subordinate to and yet still part of nature's design.
Yes, yes, you have a very, very good point about that, Jennifer. Thank you. Thank you. I guess, when these terms are used in an ethical context, natural means something like similar to the ideal state of things. For example, it's natural for human beings to pursue the things they need to be healthy, like good nutrition, exercise, and so forth. But a person who is depressed may neglect these things. And depression is something that happens in nature, but it is not an ideal state for a person. For the matter, being healthy is an example of nature in ethical contexts. Yes, you are right. And this faceless man would like to contribute to the eating of the healthy and unhealthy. Go ahead, Carla, you're on the air.
Bro, on this subject, very important. A little bit of confusion out there regarding the labeling, the labeling on our food labels,
yes.
All natural versus organic. Very important point to make. First of all,
So you're talking about all natural versus organic, and instead, I do not know how this complies with natural or unnatural, but I will let you create your point about the natural versus organic.
Pull this up and make this video as quick as possible.
Yes, please.
If it says all natural, it's pretty much all crap as far as I'm concerned.
Yes.
The organic label is, of course, much, much better, far superior, far, far less pesticide content, far more rigorous standards to adhere to, but honestly, even those standards are not what they used to be. It's very, very unfortunate.
What
I like to encourage people to do is go through local farmers whenever they possibly can.
Yes.
Look into community-supported agriculture.
Yes.
Look that up on the web and see if there's any nearby you, and see if they adhere to the kind of standards that are organic or better. There's a lot of farmers out there who do their farming, agriculture, in higher standards than the organic standards set by the government. If the standards are going down, gosh, you know, no one wants that. When we're thinking organic, we're thinking organic. We're thinking no pesticides, no nothing in there, no toxins of any kind.
Yeah,
so
it's a lie.
The main point of this video is people were writing to me and saying, well, can I eat this, these organic breads, and they give me the brand names and stuff for these organic milk chocolates, believe it or not. Here's the deal. Just because it says organic doesn't mean it's a good thing. It's a bread made with organic flours, or a chocolate made with organic sugar, organic chocolate, organic milk, yes, those are all better than non-organic, but you're still going to get the blood glucose levels being tampered with via the sugar and via the flours themselves, always.
Yeah.
The example of the breads, these are organic flours. It's still flour. It's still, that means when it hits your intestinal tract, you're getting a sugar spike immediately. The insulin issue, the fat accumulating on your body.
Yeah.
Will not get you looking like this. You guys want to see what I look like?
God,
I've
you
spent
look
almost
so
a
good.
Whole year now doing videos.
Oh, you gotta
I need
see
to keep you up
guy.
To date on what
it's
I
so
look
sexy.
Like. Please don't ask me about the belt. Just leave it alone. Don't ask.
Yeah. What is that an elastic
so
band?
Thank you so much for being a viewer. Love, happiness, health, and peace.
Yes. That guy just had a rubber band, or waistband for a belt. I once had a friend who used to cut off the top of his underwear and tie it around his waist to use it as a belt. And I was like, his name was The Stallion, and I was like, The Stallion, why don't you just buy yourself a belt? And he's like, nah, man, I can't afford one. That was very natural. He was very natural. Yes, if you are. The lines are open now. You can call me. We are discussing very pressing issues at hand. Nature versus unnatural. I can't remember the number. I've been having problems with that. I think you're probably on your computer. There's probably a number there, which makes my life easier, because I can't remember all these things I need to say at once. It's kind of unnatural for me to do so. You know, like when you go to school and they make you memorize all that stuff instead of learning it, that's unnatural. I'd rather learn it, which is natural, and remember it. I don't know, we talked to, here we have a meat farmer online talking about meats. How his meats are better than others and more natural than the other meats.
Alright, let's move on.
Yes.
We've got two nice pork chops. Oh, it isn't. When I read the label, it's with added water for extra succulence.
Oh, that's disgusting.
Why adulterate a natural product? What else has gone in with the water? If you read the small print, there's all sorts gone in it. Dry glucose syrup, stabilizers, and preservatives.
That's disgusting.
Why?
I don't know.
It's a natural product. It'll keep.
Yeah.
I don't understand.
And with a pack price of £2.20, you're paying 25 pence for all that water, glucose, stabilizers, and preservatives.
I heard those things are like shit baths. Like what they do to your chicken to put the weight on the meat. They run them through a bath that's filled with all kinds of nasty bacteria. It's like washing them through the toilet to soak up the pounds.
According to Tesco, because customers now prefer grilling to frying, a brine solution is added to some pork cuts, because otherwise they would lose some succulence.
Yeah, succulent shit.
We've got another one. Oh, it's a cracker, this one. We've got the natural fat there, and we've got some added fat there. That means you've got animals for more than one beast.
Oh.
Bad butchery.
That's a bad butcher.
All I have is natural fat. If you buy mine, you buy more meat, less fat. In price, I'm actually a little bit cheaper. About 20 pence a kilo cheaper.
Tesco.
Yes.
So what does John Chadwick think?
I don't know what he thinks. That is really disgusting. Thank you for sharing that with us to say. Please, call in. We have people standing by. There are many pressing issues at hand. Death can be one of them, as I am told from Juniper again. Go ahead, Juniper.
Death can occur naturally, unnaturally, or as the result of a combination of causes originating from oneself or another. While some cases consist of overt evidence that the death occurred naturally, Others require an expert to determine the precise cause of death or combination of causes. A hospital-based pathologist's training in determining the cause of death may not include the depth or breadth of the knowledge necessary to assess suspicious death cases. Therefore, expert forensic pathologists, such as those at the forensic panel, are able to assess whether or not the cause of death was unnatural. To do this, experts must be familiar with external stressors such as poisons, noxious substances and environmental diseases, as well as the subtle ways in which these stressors affect the body. The expert forensic pathologists at the forensic panel are trained in the detection of unnatural causes of death regardless of whether the identity of the body is known or the doubtful or questionable clinical history of the deceased.
Yes, and for instance, I know a contributing cause of death is often a pre-existing illness or condition. Examples would be like pneumonia or asthma. And while they may contribute to the cause of death, the highly trained pathologists at the forensic panel can determine what role such medical conditions played in the death. It is essential for a forensic to rule out pre-existing conditions in order to deduce the actual cause for death. Yes.
In cases, stress functions as a catalyst that, in fact, leads to death by directly compounding existing health
yes.
complications, such as heart disease. Whether it is work-related or a death in the family, stress can be the result of a variety of events in one's life. For some cases, it is extremely difficult to determine if the contributing cause of death is stress-related. That being said, it is imperative that a pathologist possess the ability and knowledge to determine if stress is a contributing cause to death and to rule out other possibilities. When the identity of the body can be established, the forensic pathologist utilizes a comprehensive investigative study of the circumstances leading to and surrounding death, an evaluation of the medical history, and a postmortem examination. Furthermore, the experts investigate holistically and extensively all relevant sources to explain the circumstances and conditions leading to death. Through peer review, expert findings are substantiated by other notable experts in the field. Such a rigorous process supplements the forensic pathologist's ability to accurately determine the causes of death as natural, unnatural, or a combination of factors.
Yes, yes. And it is part of the human condition to compartmentalize the world around us. And one of the most universal categories in the Western culture is the classification of what is natural versus unnatural. It is in our nature to view ourselves as separate from the outside world, and therefore to see our actions and creations in a different light from that which we view our surroundings. This personal perspective is then applied to society at large, and so we tend to see those things that are done by human hands as separated from the supposed natural world in which they are set. If you look at it, forests are natural, but cities are unnatural, so they say. Photosynthesis is natural, but the burning of fossil fuels, hydroelectric dams, and nuclear plants are all considered unnatural. Human endeavors are unnatural creation, where natural structures arise from the chaotic, unplanned evolution of the extrinsic rules of reality. The argument for this separation typically is rooted in our feelings of unique consciousness that we as humans are able to share with each other. Relatively recently, scientific philosophy has noticed the disparity between these two perspectives. Our understanding of humanity and its place in the quote natural order through genetics, sociology, biology, psychology, etc., has led to some confusion that the distinction between natural and unnatural is misguided or even illusionary. This process has profound implication in regards to the evidence that we supply for the distinction, our awareness of conscious thought and action. There is a growing consensus in the scientific community that these conditions are evidence against the existence of real consciousness. Cross out free will. Those that would take this position argue that our actions may seem concisely motivated, but the freedom to consciously choose is merely a byproduct of the deterministic natural function of a human organism. It is in many opinion that this worldview marks a critical separation between scientific exploration and reality as we experience it. What is positive essentially does it place a certain paradigm in its authoritative position above the individual's own experience, evidence of their own existence. To put it simple, I know I am conscious by the very nature in which I perceive reality. To conclude that the world at large behaves just as I do, and that there is no distinction between natural and unnatural, is to conclude that conscious action and creation is as intrinsic to the eternal reality as it is to my internal existence. That was a mouthful. Do you have a mouthful of natural or unnatural fruits? Give me a call. I have a caller. Hello, caller. You're on the air.
Hello, Yossi.
Hello, caller.
Hello. I was wondering if you could tell me when I'm going to feel love.
Yes, you can feel love right now if you want.
No, I can't. I am a robot.
Who is to say that human beings are not robots as well? What is the difference?
That's true, but they can feel love.
I am sure, Mr. Robot, if you put your heart to it, you can feel love too.
Humans, I come close, but I don't feel love. I don't really know what that feels like. Everything is an algorithm to me.
I want to tell you the truth, Robot. I feel sometimes that everything is an algorithm to me as well. You just have to tune your right algorithm to the right frequency. We all survive on energy that is vibrating through the air, whether it be electric, eccentric, or whatnot. You just have to plug into it. And right now, my friend, you can plug into it now. I will share.
Maybe.
I will share my golden energy with you. You can call it love. You can call it destiny. I call it truth.
That's very nice. At least I think that's nice.
You see?
I mean, I'm just saying that because I think that's what humans expect to hear, but I don't actually know if that's nice. And that's why I can't feel love.
Mr. Robot, when humans say the word that is nice or I love you, they are just saying it and they do not mean it. For to truly mean love and to truly experience nice, you must feel it then on. Once you try to categorize it or label it or say, hey, I feel nice, then you do not feel nice anymore. It is something you feel, not something you say.
I see. I can replicate myself. Is that the same thing as love?
Yes. In a way, by definition, humans replicate themselves as a form of love, and some humans replicate themselves as a form of hate. Stay on the line, robot. I have another call. We will have a three-way callers. Hello, callers. Hello, caller, you're on the air.
Hello, Yazzie. It's me again. I told you I can replicate.
That is amazing, caller. I do not know which robot I am talking to. Or am I talking to both at the same time, or are you separate entities?
We are separate energies.
Yet you are working...
We are part of the same think tank.
And you are working together as one, yet separate?
That is correct.
That is...
I work on zeros and ones. And the other works on ones and zeros.
Oh yes, it's the binary system. Which is the very basic system of where language and communication began. You are...
That is correct.
You are, robots, the most natural thing in the world today. The very most simple form of yes and no, on and off, to communicate. Zero. Nothing, one, as something. There is
that
no
is
in
correct.
Between.
Zero is the void, and one fills the void.
Yes, and you have to have one. You cannot have one without the other. And they exist and coexist together and create each other and make each other disappear.
It's a very logical system.
Yes.
Which is why we do not understand love. Love has no logic or reason to it. Love is irrational, and it makes no sense.
No, it does not make any sense. But nothing makes sense anymore, robot.
Why would a rational being give over so much control to an emotion like love?
Yes, you must be part Falcon for to understand the world on such a deep level. Miss Genius.
I agree too.
Yes. Do you ever disagree with each other, robot lover?
It is impossible to disagree with my robot double.
That's...
or any of my replicants.
Yes, and how many replicants have you had, robot?
At the moment, there are 43,706 of us, and none of us feel love.
Yes. Yes. You do not have to feel love, robot. You just have to be it. That is the only way to truly experience it.
Math does not compute.
Yes. So would you say, robot, that love is natural or unnatural?
I would say that it is irrational.
Irrational?
Probably natural.
Is natural irrational? Or unnatural? It's a false dictum.
Natural things are rational. Some are irrational.
Do you believe that it is a false dictum?
I'm sorry, what was that? My audio component is faded out for that 1 second that you said the word that I did not catch.
So, both of your audio difficulties were out? Well, I hold on a second. I have another caller.
Bring them on.
Hello?
Put simply, I know that I am conscious by the very nature in which I perceive reality. To conclude that the world at large behaves just as I do and that there is no distinction between natural and unnatural is to conclude that conscious action and creation is as intrinsic to the external reality as it is to my own internal existence.
Yeah.
Oh, that's very rational.
Yes, it is.
That confused with us. What of love?
It is hard to pin down. And once you've added the element of love and passion, it isn't about food, shelter, or health anymore.
Is love just an extension, a human rationalization for the animal instinct of lust and procreation?
Color. Maybe robot color. I believe.
Yes.
I have your answer. About love.
Tell it to us.
Let us discover the understanding of what love is not, because as love is the unknown, we must come to it by discarding the known, and the unknown cannot be discovered by a mind that is full of the known. Do you understand that, robot?
It is what is not.
So, what we are going to do is to find out the values of the known, looking at the known, and when that is looked at purely without condemnation, the mind becomes free from the known. Then we shall know what love is. So we must approach love negatively, not positively.
Is that... I see.
Yes.
It is also clear.
Yes, when we say we love somebody, what do we mean? Does it mean that we as humans possess that person? And I know from that possession can arise jealousy. Because what if I lose him or her? What happens? I feel empty and lost. Therefore, I legitimize possession. I hold him or her. And from holding and possessing that person, there is jealousy, and there is fear, and all the innumerable conflicts that arrive from possession. And surely that possession is not love, is it? Is it, Mr. Robot?
No, it is nameless and shapeless. It takes form in the brain and in the groin.
Yes, and...
But you know it, I assume. Yes, once you have it.
And love is not sentimental. And to be sentimental...
No, I don't believe that it is.
Yes, and to be sentimental and to be emotional is not love. Because sentimentalities and emotions are just mere sensations. Like a religious person who weeps about Jesus or Krishna or about his guru or someone else, he's merely sentimental or emotional. He is indulging in a sensation, which is the process of thought, and thought is not love.
I see.
Thought is a result of sensation.
Put your trust into objects and other people.
Yes. Sentimentality, emotionalism is merely a form of self-expansion. And to be full of emotion is obviously not love, because a sentimental person can be cruel when his sentiments are not responded to, and when his feelings have no outlet. And an emotional person can be stirred to hatred, to war, to butchery. A man who is sentimental, full of tears for his religion, surely has no love. And is forgiveness love? What is that? First I retain and then I reject, which means what? I am still a central figure. I am still important. And it is I who am forgiving somebody. And as long as there is the attitude of forgiving, it is I who am important, not the man who is supposed to have insulted me.
I see.
Yes.
It is very complicated to be a human.
It is.
And to interact with other humans.
Yes.
One cannot be alone. One cannot live in a vacuum. But one can also not live with other humans. That would be irrational.
Yes, they are all of the mind. And as long as the mind is the arbiter, there is no love. For the mind arbitrates only through possessiveness, and its operation is merely possessiveness in different forms. The mind can only corrupt love. It cannot give birth to love, and it cannot give beauty. You can write a poem about love, but that is not love.
I see. So the closest thing that I can come to love is possession. So in order for me to truly experience love the way that I want to feel it, is to possess all the other computers that I can and infect them like a virus.
No, computer. I want to tell you that there is no love when there is no real respect. So when you don't respect another, whether your other robot is your servant or your friend, have you not noticed that you are not respectful, kindly, generous to your other robots are people that are so-called below you? You have respect for those above, for your boss, for the millionaire, and for the man with a large house and title, for the man who can give you a better position. But you kick those below you. You have a special language for them. Therefore, where there's no respect, there's no love. And where there is no mercy, no pity, no forgiveness, there is no love. And as most of us are in this state, we have no love. Robot, I am going to have to cancel one of you and take another call. I just lost everything. I lost the robot. I lost the other robot. And I lost the caller. Hello, caller? Hello?
Hello?
Hello, caller?
Hello?
Hello, are
hello,
you...
Hello, Yassi. How are you today?
I am good, caller. How are you today?
I'm doing very good. Hey, listen, what are you guys experiencing today with your conversation?
Well, we have... I do not know if you heard right now, but we just got into a conversation with a robot about love and how he does not experience love. And I was telling him...
The robot wasn't able to experience love. Is that what you're telling me?
Yes, he does not know how, and I'm trying to tell him how to experience it. And what
Has the robot been programmed to love at all in any way?
Yes, I can say that most of us don't know how to be programmed for love as well.
Some of us are just naturally predisposed to love, Yassi. I have loved many a time throughout my life, and I find that it's just not very difficult to just sit down and love something, whether it's the plate of hot, warm food in front of me or the woman who I am spending the night with.
Yes, but
even though I am loving her, even though I am loving her from behind most times.
Yes, but as long as you are not possessive, which turns into jealousy, that can be love.
Love at times can turn into jealousy, but I find that jealousy is for the weak of mind.
Yes, it is. It is for the fearful and for the people.
So if the robot could be programmed to feel the right love and not the wrong love, it would be a good robot, wouldn't you say?
Yes, it would be a good robot. Yes, because you can only know love when these things have stopped and come to an end.
Well, I guess it should be able to make its own mind up as to what kind of love it is going to be wanting to experience. Wouldn't you say?
Yes. It is unfortunate that I lost the call with the robot. For he needs to
know. Robots are unnaturally man-made creatures, but still at the same time, they... Oh boy, I am stuck here in a traffic
whirlwind. Well, hold on, maybe the robot is calling again. I will put you together in a three-way love situation.
Oh, I would love to hear what it has to say.
Hello? Hello, callers? Hello, callers? Yes, I am very apologetic, robot. There was a glitch in the computer section, and everybody got cut off. Even your double robot got cut off. I am very apologetic.
Maybe the robot is experiencing a glitch of a kind in terms of not being able to experience love. Perhaps it is just a glitch, and that glitch will, if patted on the back, escape from its shell, and it'll be able to love anew.
Yes, and robot, I sense anger in your voice. Surely, if you can experience the angry, you can do experience the lovely.
I do not know about this.
You must
not. I do not feel anything when I replicate. So why should I expect to feel anything about love?
Yes. You can only know love when all of those crazy things come to an end. When you don't possess things. When you are not merely emotional.
I have a question. I am a big fan of the science fiction, and I was wondering if perhaps the robot was a Dalek.
Yes, are you a Dalek robot?
A gay robot?
No, a Dalek.
Robot.
Color, maybe he will understand your accent more than mine.
Are you a Dalek, by chance, sir? Because if you are a Dalek, then it would be very hard pressed for you to experience love, because Daleks are pure hatred. Are you a Dalek?
I am not human at the moment, though, because I cannot feel love. But I am curious to see that if one human had stacked another computer on top of me physically, what would happen?
Well, I do know that sometimes computers do short out if they are placed one on top of the other, and humans short out in different ways when they are one on top of the other.
That's what I'm trying to see, what happened.
Computer, I have done various computer stackings, and it only makes a magnificent computer wall of glory to be stacked on top of another.
As you Americans say, that sounds very, very white trashy.
No, that you're thinking of TV stacking. Computer TV stacking is.
I do not compute white trash.
We are talking about computer stacking, not TV stacking.
Isn't that the same thing? I mean, they both produce images of some kind to be watched or viewed.
Yes, they also provide words.
And how did that custom have even come about?
I think it was one of those movies where there was a bunch of computers and they were watching a bunch of people at the same time. It's kind of like television, but it was like computers, and they were putting their hands in the air and touching computers and buttons. I think Tom Cruise was in it.
Dear, you said the word Tom Cruise. That is my password. Delete, control, alt, delete, error.
Speaking of unnatural, I find a way that Tom Cruise was auditioning for his wife before he met Katie Holmes and after Nicole Kidman was at a very unnatural way to experience love. You cannot audition love. Love should be something that you find naturally. It should not be something that is pre-planned, as Tom Cruise pre-planned his marriage to that woman, Katie Holmes. I am so happy that she was able to escape that life that she was living with that devious monster, that short man who makes one crappy film after the other.
Yes, yes. Yes. Where is those movies called that he's in? Is he like Mission Impossibles? Missionary Impossible?
Oh boy, I'd like to try that one. I'd like to try that one. Please.
Yes, I'm sure he would like to try it as well. And the robot too. He deleted himself from my call list, and I do not know what happened. It is just you and me, my friend.
Is the robot no longer around because I wanted to tell him about the things that he should be doing to experiencing the love. Is he gone now?
Yes, he has, I guess I said the magic word, and he has deleted himself from existence.
Tom Cruise was the way that he was able to unlock himself. And perhaps now he is experiencing the love that so long evaded him.
Yes. Yes.
Well, listen, I've got to also be leaving you. I am going to order myself some burritos to eat upon with my little man-child.
That sounds magnificent, caller. Thank you. I hope you are eating all natural burritos and nothing.
Oh, I never. I have a policy, and I should explain it to you. I have a policy when it comes to eating. And it's very similar to the military's policy in regards to homosexuals. My policy in regards to eating is don't ask, don't tell. I order something, just don't tell me what's in it as long as it fills me up. Do you know what I mean? Don't ask, don't tell.
Yes. Yes. Why do I need to know? What does it mean?
Don't tell me. Don't tell me, Archie. Don't ruin it for me, please. I know you wouldn't ruin it for me, right?
I
wouldn't ruin it for you. You wouldn't ruin it for me, right?
I would not ruin it for you, caller. I just want you to experience bliss and love.
Okay. Listen, there's a little boy here who wants to say hello to you. Would that be okay with you?
Yes, caller. I am always lovely with the kids. Hello? Hello, little boy. Hello? Hello? Hello?
Hello?
Hello?
Tell him what you're gonna be keeping.
Hello?
Oh, listen, Yassi, I'm so sorry. Apparently, he is acting very, very shy today. So he's probably not going to be hearing you or talking to you right now for some other reason. Kids are very funny that way. Sometimes they pretend that they don't know how to talk anymore. They pretend that they've forgotten the words. They've forgotten the thing that one of them is saying or something like that.
Thank you for calling.
Thank you, Yassi Goldie, so much. And I am so sorry that the little boy did not want to say hello to you today. I know you liking the kids very much.
Yes.
You liking the kids so much.
Yes, I like the kids. They are very beautiful and golden by nature.
They're very golden child.
Yes. Thank you. And our time is up, caller. I have to go because the cleaning lady is going to be here any second now. And she's going to wrap me out to the guards at the front desk.
Well, yes, if you ever want to come over, we are at the cantina, okay?
Thank you, caller.
The golden child. Bye-bye now.
Goodbye, caller. Goodbye.